You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialised fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Robbins. Today I'm taking a break from fiction serials to read you another essay from my Pratchett's Women collection. Next week I'm going to be starting the brand new Creature Court prequel novella, Cabaret of Monsters, so come back for that. This essay is a completely spoilerific review of Lords and Ladies by Terry Pratchett, which is one of my all-time favourite novels. Slash, Stab, A Lesson in Practical Queening. Lords and Ladies, 1992. This is the best kind of fantasy novel. The greatest thing that fantasy as a genre can do is to say something important about our world and history, ideally while also commenting in some way on the traditions of the genre itself, and being a damn good read, to boot. If you add to that a bunch of female characters driving the plot, my heart will certainly be won over. Oh yes, Lords and Ladies is that good. In one sense, this book is the last third of an unofficial trilogy, with Weird Sisters and Witches Abroad, featuring the original trio of Pratchett's witches, Granny Weatherwax, Nanny Ogg, and Magrat Garlic. In another sense, it's the beginning of another unofficial trilogy, with Masquerade and Carpe Jugulum, about the mortality and power of Granny Weatherwax, with bonus Nanny Ogg at every turn, and the growing pains of Agnes Perdita Knit. Lords and Ladies is also, like so many of Pratchett's best books, a book about stories. Having already taken on Shakespeare and fairy tales, he addresses the roles of women in English folk songs and folklore. This is a story about cold iron and fairy glamour, of midsummer rituals and blood in the snow and dodgy innuendos about Morris dancers and maypoles. It's a story about how practicality trumps romance every time, if you're lucky. Most of all, while it has much to say about witches and wives and mothers, this is a story about queens. I love the progression of Magrat in Lords and Ladies. She finds herself in the unexpected position of being engaged to a king, and then awkwardly tiptoes around and through the question of what exactly a queen is supposed to do all day. There's a running commentary on the double standard, of how Verence can basically trot around with his arse out of his trousers, acting only slightly more regally than when he was a fool. Meanwhile, the new queen has fashion requirements and antiquated traditions to juggle, not to mention the juxtaposition of high feminine status with officially sanctioned uselessness. Scenes where Magrat and her hapless lady's maid try to figure out the ridiculous clothes, her position on embroidery, and so on, are both funny and poignant, but it turns quite tragic when Magrat believes that she has to leave her old life as a witch and healer behind, ridding herself of all of her magical paraphernalia. She literally steps out of one identity and into another. Understandably, it messes with her head. Pratchett is excellent at pointing out story tropes that are actually ridiculous if you try to fit ordinary people into them. And so Lords and Ladies comments not only on the traditional portrayal of queens in mythology, history and literature, but also on the shifting nature of women's identity when they marry. Magrat's personal journey comes to a head with her discovery of Queen Insi, a warrior queen archetype no one had told her about, and then again with her encounter with the royal beekeeper, who tells her the most fascinating details about the selection criteria for queen bees. When the chips are down and her royal husband is in danger, Magrat gets to emulate both Queen Insi and the queens of bee kind, becoming a true slash-stab kick-ass heroine. Alongside Magrat's personal journey is an ongoing narrative about Granny Weatherwax and Nanny Ogg trying to deal with the actual hazard. Elves returning to the Discworld, while keeping Magrat in the dark because of their perception of her as someone who believes ballads over real life. They assume she's going to believe elves are cute and romantic, And yes, that is her first reaction. And yes, it does almost get her killed. But mostly because the older witches never taught her otherwise. While this is deeply frustrating, it's also a culmination of an ongoing character arc for the older witches over the last few books. They've never taken Magrat seriously. And Granny being wrong in this instance is vital to the plot. Because this is also the book in which Granny Weatherwax dies. She doesn't die, of course. This is the book that made the I Ate and Dared sign so legendary. But this is one of several Discworld novels in which the narrative leads Granny into her final battle. And against all laws of narrative, she survives. This particular final battle is resolved because of a different Granny in her head, one who married young instead of becoming a witch. Pratchett deals with what he likes to call the trousers of time quite regularly, but this is the most compelling of his stories about alternate universes, and how a little knowledge of them can go a long way. It's important that Granny is wrong about Magrat, because it shows her vulnerability, which suggests that she might actually die. For many, many books, we've been told that witches and wizards know when they're going to die. It's one of the essential facts of the Discworld. Here, Pratchett provides a major fake-out that, crucially, is not a cheat. It's fascinating to see how he puts all the little pieces of this plot together, and how everyone's narrative circles back to the same repeated elements, all tied up into a beautiful bow. Granny's impending not-death is prefigured by the introduction of Diamanda, a teen mean girl who wants to be a witch, but thinks it's all about black nail polish and looking glamorous. Because of this error in judgment, she lets loose sociopathic elves across the Ramtops. Pratchett conveys a girl clique startlingly well, with the other girls dancing around Diamanda, desperate to copy her, much like bees around a queen. Oh yes, theme, I see you. And we get our first introduction to Perdita / Agnes Knitt, who only appears in a few scenes, but shows herself to be the most pragmatic of the girls. In a book that's all about how practicality owns romance, it's clear we're supposed to like Agnes and keep an eye on her in the future. It's important that Granny is wrong about Magrat, but just as important that Magrat wins the day, because she's always been far more practical than the older witches gave her credit for. She's romantic, but she's learned to harness that appropriately and not to let it get in her way. The differences between the three witches are celebrated in this book, showing how each of their methods can be valid. In fact, the story is very much about relationships between women. Pecking orders, cliques, love, rivalries, loyalty, generational divides, and how the memory of the young girl she was can very much affect the choices of an old woman. My favourite part of Lords and Ladies is when Granny takes the unconscious Diamanda to Magrat. And I quote, "It's all very well a potion calling for love in idleness, but which of the 37 common plants called by that name in various parts of the continent was actually meant? The reason that Granny Weatherwax was a better witch than Magrat was that she knew that in witchcraft, it didn't matter a damn which one it was, or even if it was a piece of grass. The reason that Magrat was a better doctor than Granny was that she thought it did." Even though Granny has grossly underestimated Magrat's ability to be sensible in the face of elves, she trusts her medical abilities over her own. That's a hell of a thing for a woman her age to admit. Towards the end of the book, Granny Weatherwax reveals that the inspirational Queen Incy, who inspired Magrat to fight the Elf Queen, almost certainly never existed. Her spiky armour definitely is not authentic. But it doesn't matter whether she was real or not. The function of folklore to warn and educate, as well as to entertain, infuses this book, from the surreal Midsummer Night's Dream parody to the deadly Morris dances, the songs and traditions, and the vicious nature of the elves themselves. There's also romance in the book, a romantic storyline for each of the witches. Our pragmatic, raunchy Nanny Og is courted by the younger and much shorter Cassandunda the dwarf. He thinks he's worldly and experienced until he gets a load of what's going on in her brain. Then we get Ridcully the wizard being soppy and sentimental about what could have been. Between him and Esmeralda Weatherwax, in another lifetime, almost getting them killed through his nostalgia. Meanwhile, Granny herself is hard-edged and practical, far more concerned with saving the world than getting all silly about that boy she once kissed. Oddly, it reminds me somewhat of the relationship between Katniss and her boys in The Hunger Games. Then there's the newly betrothed Magrat and Verence. Their awkwardness and inability to have actual conversations with each other is balanced out by their slow journey towards being a married couple, which includes sending off for a book to teach them about sex, since they're both inconveniently inexperienced in that department. This is a romance of two people being sensibly in love with each other, and I adore them. There should be more stories that show how some of the best romance can be practical, rather than all dramatic and eyes across a crowded room. Plus, when it comes down to it, Magrat saves her man. So there's a bit of epic folk song love story in there too. Have I mentioned how much I love this book? It's funny, clever, feminist, and has so much to say about the power of story. The plot is perfect, down to the last detail. The relationship between beliefs and real magic is expressed powerfully, without suggesting that either of those are more important than the other. The adventure, the comedy, and the romance all exist to serve the narrative of three extraordinary women. Elves are wonderful. They provoke wonder. Elves are marvellous. They cause marvels. Elves are fantastic. They create fantasies. Elves are glamorous. They project glamour. Elves are enchanting. They weave enchantment. Elves are terrific. They beget terror. Elves are bad. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. See you next week.